It is Friday, September the 21st. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you here. Coming up, confirming a new member of the U.S. High Court.
Kavanaugh was nominated to replace retired Justice Anthony Kennedy. His confirmation would solidify a conservative majority on the Supreme Court.
Achieving diplomacy on the Korean Peninsula.
The problem, of course, is that Kim Jong-un, at this stage, hasn't done a single meaningful thing to dismantle his nuclear weapons.
Also ahead, tough times for migrants in Greece, plus a little something from the world of music. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. The U.S. Senate remains divided over the fate of High Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. Kavanaugh has denied an allegation by Christine Blasey Ford that he assaulted her when they were teenagers. Dr. Ford and opposition Democrats are demanding an FBI investigation into the alleged assault before she would testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee, while President Trump and Senate Republicans are so far resisting. We get more now on the battle over the Kavanaugh nomination from VOA national correspondent Jim Malone.
President Trump is standing by his Supreme Court nominee, Judge Brett Kavanaugh.
This is a very tough thing for him and his family. And we want to get it over with. At the same time, we want to give tremendous amounts of time. If she shows up, that would be wonderful. If she doesn't show up, that would be unfortunate.
Professor Christine Blasey Ford has been invited to testify Monday before the Senate Judiciary Committee. But Ford first wants the FBI to investigate her allegation that Kavanaugh sexually assaulted her when they were teenagers in the 1980s. Ford has the support from Senate Democrats, including Kirsten Gillibrand of New York.
The fact that she has to protect her children from death threats and this kind of assertions online about her, I think, is exactly why survivors of sexual violence do not come forward.
Law professor Anita Hill is also among those calling for a full investigation. In 1991, Hill accused then-Supreme Court nominee Clarence Thomas of sexual misconduct, though Thomas was eventually confirmed by a narrow margin.
There is no reason for them to rush this and push this in with a six-day time frame. The American public really is expecting something more. The American public wants to know about what happened, and they want to know that the Senate takes this seriously.
Republicans have complained that the Ford allegation came after lengthy and contentious hearings where Kavanaugh was questioned by senators from both parties. South Dakota Republican Senator John Thune.
There have been 1,300 written questions that have been responded to by Judge Kavanaugh, and he met with 65 United States senators over the course of the last 2 months, and never a whiff of this letter until just this last week.
Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski says it's important that both Ford and Kavanaugh be heard.
My hope is that it will be conducted with a level of respect and integrity for the process and for the people.
Do you believe the allegations are credible?
I think that is exactly why we have this process.
The controversy has now put Kavanaugh's nomination, a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court, in jeopardy, says legal analyst Paul Schiff Berman.
And I think that this accusation will solidify the Democratic opposition to Kavanaugh's nomination. And given the fact that Republicans hold only a small majority in the Senate, the defection of just a small number of Republican senators would defeat this nomination.
Kavanaugh was nominated to replace retired Justice Anthony Kennedy. His confirmation would solidify a conservative majority on the Supreme Court. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
And also in the news, South Korean President Moon Jae-in and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un held a three-day summit this week, with Kim pledging to dismantle key missile facilities and close its main nuclear complex at Yongbyon. President Trump and U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo praised the offer, Pompeo inviting his North Korean counterparts to talks on sidelines of next week's U.N. General Assembly in New York, and called for delegations from both countries to sit down in Vienna, which is headquarters of the International Atomic Energy Agency. Pompeo said Washington is ready to engage immediately in negotiations for the North's complete denuclearization. Bruce Bennett, a senior defense analyst at RAND Corporation, tells VOA's Victor Beatty shutting down the Yongbyon nuclear reactor would likely take longer than other aspects of the North's denuclearization.
To collect up all of North Korea's nuclear weapons and disable his production capabilities, you could do that in a year or so, I would expect. The problem, of course, is that Kim Jong-un, at this stage, hasn't done a single meaningful thing to dismantle his nuclear weapons. In fact, he's going the opposite direction. He's making nuclear weapons and increasing his stockpile. And there's really nothing in the summit that's going to stop him from doing that. I think President Moon likely tried as hard as he could, but I don't think Kim Jong-un has decided yet that he really is going to do this. I think he's playing for time.
So you see no significance in the pronouncement of a dismantling of key missile facilities in the eyes of so-called concerned country experts or the closure of the main Yongbyon nuclear complex?
The missile facilities, Kim Jong-un had already talked about dismantling those. This wasn't something new. This was a repeat of something that had already occurred. On the Yongbyon complex, he says, well, I'm prepared to do this if I'm compensated by the Americans. Excuse me? He's already been generously compensated for doing something which he hasn't really done yet. This is a kind of case where, like I say, for many Americans, I think he seems to be stalling. I think he's anxious to build up his nuclear weapons to the point where he can actively coerce the United States and other regional countries, but he's not there yet, and so he's got to delay us taking serious action against him.
Is the U.S. reacting too quickly to this summit?
Oh, no. I think regardless of whether we think that Kim Jong-un is prepared to do what he is obligated and committed to doing, we still ought to try our best to get him to meet his commitments. I mean, he is committed. The April 27th agreement, Kim said he would implement all previous agreements, and one of the previous agreements said he would go to zero nuclear weapons. So Kim is committed to going to zero. He's just going in the opposite direction, and that's really hard to understand if he's sincere.
He's calling for U.S. unspecified actions in return. What might those include?
Oh, I think what he wants is relaxation of the sanctions. That's clear that he wants that. I think he wants diplomatic recognition, but probably most important is a peace agreement. He wants a peace agreement, I believe, because he wants to undermine the basis for U.S. troops in Korea. You know, he knows he could do that bilaterally with President Moon of South Korea tomorrow. President Moon would sign a peace agreement with him, but that doesn't get him what he wants. What he wants is the U.S. to sign a peace agreement so that then China and Russia can go to the U.N. and say, see, the U.S. signed a peace agreement. There's no longer a need for a U.N. command in Korea. All of the U.S. forces that are in Korea don't need to be there because there's peace now.
That's Bruce Bennett. He is senior defense analyst at the RAND Corporation, and he was speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Next up, has the Trump administration downplayed the promotion of democracy overseas? We'll ask the presidents of the International Republican Institute and the National Democratic Institute, who also discuss their work helping democracies around the world conduct free and fair elections, implement the rule of law, and build vibrant civil societies. That's Encounter, Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This is VOA's International Edition. The medical aid group Doctors Without Borders, known by the acronym MSF, is calling for an emergency evacuation of vulnerable people, especially children, from the Moria refugee camp that's on Greece's Lesbos island to other EU member states. Rome-based journalist Josephine McKenna spoke with VOA's Kim Lewis about the dire situation on Lesbos and the response from the Greek government.
This is not the first time that we've heard complaints from NGOs like Médecins Sans Frontières. Now they're saying the situation in the Moria migrant camp on the Greek island of Lesbos is completely unsustainable. This camp is built for 3,000 people and there are now 9,000 migrants and refugees in this camp. And there's a great deal of concern about the impact of this health and mental health emergency on the men, women, and especially the children living in this camp. And psychologists are saying they're seeing an increase in suicide attempts and self-harm, particularly among children, as well as cases of sexual attacks inside this camp.
Also, are the children, are they unaccompanied children?
There is a mix, I think, of the children who are housed inside this camp. We've seen new arrivals recently. Just a few hundred came in the last few days. They're continuing to come, even though the numbers, as we know, are lower this year than in other years. The regional governor, Christina Kalogoriou, said that she too was concerned about the situation and threatened to shut this camp down within 30 days unless the government stepped in.
And what has the government said it's going to do at this time?
Well, the Greek government, under pressure, has said that it will move 2,000 asylum seekers out of this overcrowded camp in the next couple of weeks. That's not going to be enough, I don't think, to relieve the pressure, but it's a start, it's a step in the right direction. They will be moved to the mainland and hopefully other parts of Europe. But as we know, many other European countries do not want to share the burden of these migrant arrivals. So countries like Greece, Italy and Spain have been on the front line of this migrant crisis.
Can you talk a little bit more just about really what is going on there at the camp?
Well, the camp itself is so overcrowded. There are reports that there's raw sewage running through the camp, which is incredibly inappropriate and unhealthy, of course, unsanitary. But the psychologists from Médecins Sans Frontières said they were particularly concerned about children aged between 6 and 18 years. The teams had observed nearly a quarter of these children, 18 out of 74, had shown indications of self-harm, attempted suicide, or thoughts of committing suicide. And many children suffer from panic attacks, anxiety, aggressive outbursts, and nightmares. Now, many of these children, as we know, have come from war-torn countries like Syria and Iraq, where they've already experienced extreme levels of violence and trauma. So being in these extreme conditions is really a concern, and experts say that they feel that the conditions are exacerbating their mental health, which is in a fragile state.
From MSF's standpoint, how long do they think that this can go on like this before they start seeing worse conditions?
Well, they feel that this is an extreme emergency. The situation is urgent. They want to see urgent action. We've seen an immediate response from the Greek government. Now they'll be looking to see that that is followed through. So there is concern, particularly because there are still new arrivals. 3,000 people were transferred from Moria to the mainland over the summer. Another 700 were moved last week, according to the Greek authorities. But we're still seeing new arrivals. So the pressure is not going to necessarily go away unless the Greek government takes more extreme action and moves even more people out of this camp. In terms of the overall arrivals, we've seen 80,000 migrants arrive in Europe so far this year. Only 22,000 of those have arrived in Greece, and half the arrivals have gone to Spain, with another 20,000 in Italy. Those numbers are down on previous years, but it's this overcrowding in the camps that is causing concern among NGOs such as Médecins Sans Frontières.
That is Rome-based journalist Josephine McKenna speaking with Kim Lewis, who is host of the VOA program Africa News Tonight. Facebook has always been a convenient way to send birthday wishes to family and friends, but many users have started taking advantage of a new feature introduced about a year ago by that social networking site to turn birthday wishes into donations to help a favorite cause. Michelle Quinn has her story.
Dan Jensen loves working as a volunteer, helping injured sea lions at the Marine Mammal Center in Northern California. He loves it so much that when his 65th birthday came around, he turned to his 1,400 Facebook friends to help raise money for the center.
Well, I should do something useful for my birthday, not just get good wishes. So I set a goal of $500 because I thought, you know, why not? And I hit the mark after a day or two, so I ended up with $2,300. It surpassed my wildest dreams.
Jensen used a relatively new feature on Facebook that makes it easy to invite friends and family to donate to the birthday celebrant's special cause. Jensen let his donors know they made a difference.
And so I said, you've bought a ton of fish. You're feeding it, all the animals we have on site for several days.
Facebook has been under scrutiny recently over how its services are used to spread hate or influence foreign elections. But its birthday fundraiser feature shows the power of using social media for good, says Facebook spokeswoman Royal Winner.
And what's really exciting about this is in the one short year that birthday fundraisers have been out there, over $300 million has been raised for nonprofits.
And the birthday fundraisers are having a big impact.
We've heard from a lot of nonprofits that this has really changed the way that they're doing fundraising. Whereas before, organizations would have to host a big gala or have high overhead in doing a big fundraising campaign or letter writing campaign.
Michelle Quinn, VOA News, San Francisco.
And still ahead, the sounds of Al Stewart. This is VOA.
This is BizBeat.
I almost gave up on finding a job on my career path. So this brings light to my world again.
Hard to believe a day to Sega with two Australian engineering degrees would have a hard time finding a job, but she did. 7 years it took her to get hired in the field. To Sega from Ethiopia represents a new set of skilled migrants, 23 of them, who are part of a pilot program in Australia helping people find jobs. Okay. And now they're working in infrastructure, including Australia's new freeway tunnel in Melbourne. Trevor Hall is the executive general manager at John Holland Group, an engineering giant.
And there's people out there we know are engineers who would love to actually be part of the industry, but they've never been just given that opportunity to, you know, get a break.
Australia is undergoing a $100 billion infrastructure boom, so perhaps more qualified migrants will continue to get a chance to show their stuff. For VOA's BizBeat, I'm Philip Alexiou.
This is VOA's International Edition, so good to have you with us today. It is time now for a little something from the world of music. Stewart is a British singer-songwriter and folk rock musician who rose to prominence as part of the British folk revival in the 1960s and 70s. He developed a unique style of combining folk rock songs with delicately woven tales of characters as well as events from history.
The things you lean on, the things that don't last. Well, it's just now and then my line gets cast into these times. There's something back there that you left behind. Oh, time passages. Buy me a ticket on the last train home.
time passages was a significant part of Al Stewart's worldwide commercial success. He was a key figure in British music, and he appears throughout the musical folklore of the revivalist era. Stewart played at the first ever Glastonbury Festival in 1970. He knew Yoko Ono before she met John Lennon, shared a London flat with a young Paul Simon, and hosted at a London folk club in the 1960s. His 1977 hit, On the Border, which he wrote, is among his fans' favorites.
Go out across the evening water, smuggling guns and arms across the Spanish border. The wind whips up the waves aloud. The ghost moon sails among the clouds, turns the rifles into silver on the border. On my wall, the colors of the maps are running. From Africa, the winds, they talk of changes coming. The torches flare up in the night. The hand that sets the farms alight to spread the word to those who are waiting on the border. In the village where I grew up, nothing seems the same. Still, you never see the change from day to day. No one notices the customs slip away. Late last night the rain was knocking on my window. I moved across the darkened room and in the lamp glow, I thought I saw down in the street the spirit of the century telling us that we're all standing on the border. In the islands where I grew up, nothing seems the same. It's just the patterns that remain, an empty shell. But there's a strangeness in the air you feel too well.
Al Stewart has released 16 studio and 3 live albums since his debut album, Bedsitter Images, in 1967, and continues to tour extensively in the U.S., Canada, Europe, and the U.K., and he is best known for his 1976 hit single, Year of the Cat. Scotland, raised in Dorset and gaining fame in London, Stewart moved to Los Angeles shortly after the release of Year of the Cat from the album of the same name, which went platinum in 1976.
As she locks up your arms and you follow till your sense of which direction completely disappears. By the blue tile walls near the market stall, there's a hidden door she leads you to. These days, she says, I feel my life just like a river running through the year of the cat.
A That's really hard to believe. It's been 42 years since that song came out. But I can tell you why it doesn't seem so long ago. It's featured in tons of films and TV programs, and it's one of the biggest downloads out there. If you listen to XM or Sirius or one of those satellite channels, you're going to hear it all the time, every day. Al Stewart. Hey, listen, many thanks, everyone, for joining us here on The Voice of America for International Edition. Good to have you with us. Up next, the latest world news, so we hope you'll stay tuned. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Dave Magnus, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. We're hoping you have a super Friday. Now a bit more from Al Stewart.
This is Today in History. September 21st, 19 BC is believed to be the date that the Roman poet Virgil died. He is the author of the classic Aeneid. In 1558, Charles V died. The ruler of the Holy Roman Empire for 37 years was plagued by constant warfare and the inability to unite Europe under the Roman Catholic religion. He abdicated shortly before his death. In 1780, traitor Benedict Arnold gave the British the plans for West Point, a fortified American military site during the Revolutionary War, later the home of the premier U.S. Army Military College. On this day in 1784, America's first daily newspaper, the Pennsylvania Packet and Daily Advertiser, began publication in Philadelphia. In 1792, the French National Convention voted to abolish the nation's monarchy. 4 months later, the former king, Louis XVI, was beheaded. In 1937, British writer and scholar J.R.R. Tolkien published the first edition of The Hobbit. The fantasy story was his first successful work of fiction. In 1938, without warning, a hurricane struck New York's Long Island and southern New England, causing hundreds of deaths and widespread coastal damage. In 1989, on this day, a Category 5 hurricane named Hugo made landfall near Charleston, South Carolina, killing dozens and causing billions in damage. And in 1999, an earthquake in Taiwan killed thousands of people and caused large-scale damage. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.
This is